other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Roller Skates, the shoes that really move. My name's Aaron, here with my personal pal, Dave.
Hey, boys.
Brick.
Hey, boys.
And calling from all the way in Old Ireland, we have Old Irish Nico.
Hello, boys.
It's not that stupid. It's very accurate. Listeners, you'll recall a couple, maybe like a 2 months ago or something like that. I can't remember exactly when it was by now. We did an episode about romance literature, romance novels, and kind of discussed different genres that we don't really sort of spend a lot of time with in general, and wanted to maybe revisit them, right? You know, why do we, or visit them in the first place, I guess. You know, what's going on with romance novels, what's going on with sort of cozy mysteries, that kind of stuff. We have done some experimentation, we've come back with results. We have findings for you. So, Brick, you read a Halloween cozy, right?
Yeah, I also went out and bought a romance book that I'm happy to share with you. I did not read it, but I feel like if I share the jacket copy, that's almost the same thing as
reading. Basically,
yeah.
So here's the cover. It's nice and racist.
Oh, God, yes.
This is called Which Way Home? Hester's Hunt for Home, Book 2, a romance set in colonial America by the best-selling Amish author Linda Byler. On the cover is a darker-skinned woman with what appears to be Indian clothes photoshopped onto her body. She looks like a stock photo actress. In the background is an Amish dude standing next to a wigwam, and then there is a bonnet hanging in the tree. Oof. Right here. Yeah. And it says, born a Native American but brought up Amish, Hester Zug, at age 20, flees her Amish home. Her father's too tender care of her has made her stepmother wildly jealous. So Hester sets off, knowing only that she can't stay. The dazzlingly beautiful Hester eventually marries an Amish man who is more in love with the way she looks than with her heart and mind. And when that childless marriage falters, she's met one day in the fields by Hunting Wolf, a Native American brave who has watched her for years.
Oh boy.
He asks her to marry him, giving her until wintertime to decide. Byler, an active member of the Amish, centers the second book on Hester's Hunt for Home series on two anguishing questions. Where is Hester's heart most at home, and can she ever be married happily?
Two books.
Wait, what was the author described as? Is it an active member of the Amish?
Correct.
What does that entail, I wonder?
Well, let me tell you, because she's got her whole bio right on the back of the book.
Oh, right.
Not even putting it on the inside flap. Linda Byler grew up as Amish and is an active member of the Amish church today. In addition to the Hester's Hunt for Home series, she's the author of three other best-selling fiction series, all set in the Amish world: Lancaster Burning, Sadie's Montana, and Lizzie Searches for Love. Byler also has written three Christmas romances, The Little Amish Matchmaker, The Christmas Visitor, and Mary's Christmas Goodbye. Linda is well known, too, within the Amish community as a columnist for an Amish newspaper.
That's quite the creds.
Linda is well known within the Amish community as a columnist.
Yeah, all 30 of them know her.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm not gonna read it. I was going to, and then I'm not, because it's like,
yeah, that's
500
a lot.
Pages long.
Plus, you've run into trouble in the past reviewing Amish fiction.
I didn't run into trouble. I did a great review that was just not well received because they demanded, part of their rule was I had to copy my, so I reviewed it for Chamber 4, and then part of the stipulations of the publisher, who like would really want to, I was like, I don't think I should review this book because I'm not going to like it. They're like, yeah, but we need people to read this, so go ahead and read it. All right. And then like when you do, you have to post it to the Amazon reviews, whatever. So my review of that book is still up there. I can't remember the name of the book. And then I got a lot of downvotes.
Which is surprising, because why are the Amish using Amazon?
Right.
They're, I doubt it. All right. Anyway, that was my diversion. I did read a cozy.
Right.
I believe, Nico, you read this as well at my behest?
Yeah. Thanks.
It is. You're welcome. It is called, we didn't time this very well because it's supposed to line up with Spooktober.
Right.
But that's fine. It is called Candy Coated Murder, A Pumpkin Hollow Mystery by Kathleen Suzette.
Yeah.
It is Kathleen Suzette's first book, and it is the first book in a series that now I believe is up to three books.
Perfect.
What was the question? You just asked me what it was, or I need to talk about
no,
it?
No, I was just asking you to identify it. So we have, and then I read one of the Harlequin romance novels, like the classic, like actual from Harlequin, not just like the description of it, written by Claire Connolly, called Spaniard's Baby of Revenge. It was gifted to me by friends who bought it on their honeymoon somewhere in the Caribbean, I think.
Thinking that you would enjoy the book, or thinking that you would have fun mocking it?
Yeah, just thinking it would be funny to buy a book with a title Spaniard Baby of Revenge. They're correct. It is funny, and I did read it.
Can I ask you a question before you reveal the answer, which I assume is coming up?
Bro to bro?
No, but I will think of one. Does your book read like it was written by a professional author?
Yes. I would say that.
Yeah, I think we're going to find that being the difference, maybe not between genres, but between genre books written a while ago. When was that book written?
Let's see.
I'm going to guess 2018.
2019.
2019?
What is it?
2019.
Wow.
Oh, that's going to blow my theory out of the water. Well, maybe it's just because it's from Harlequin, which is at least taller than the rest in that industry. But
yeah,
I feel like one of the gripes we have with genre a lot is that it's not edited well, you know, and not from a sentence level thing, but it's just like, yeah, they really just had the plot they had and they stuck with it,
right?
You know, and there's not a lot of, you know, my impression of romance books, like we talked about in that episode, is largely the shit I saw my grandmother reading. And the people that wrote those books, like, their job was to write those books, and they were probably competently crafted within the, like, the definition of whatever that the expectations are for those kind of books.
Yeah, I think you're looking at difference between like the Patterson machine versus self-publishing, right? Like a Patterson machine style.
Sure, yeah.
Like those books are like bad in terms of the plots are stupid, but they're written by people who know how to write, and like this, they're not like stylistic. There's technical execution of like writing craft, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in self-publishing or even close to that, like there's this like, I don't know, those control mechanisms aren't there. So it's a lot wilder.
Yeah, so spoiler alert for what this book's like.
I don't know.
I think our question going into this project was... Oh, sorry, go ahead. You go.
I think there's like a lot of... Like, I don't think James Patterson is like competently written. Or even like Dan Brown. Dan Brown's books are terribly written. And he just manages to like come up with a weird, you know, like not even a plot really, but just like a series of puzzles. But I mean, I remember reading that and wondering how it ever got published, because it was so poorly written. Like just not necessarily like words in the wrong order, but almost, you know, like very, very, very poor.
This is quickly getting into a different conversation maybe, but there's a difference in the tone or the voice. Or like it's very easy to pick out the amateur writers, and it's not necessarily a sentence level thing. It's not necessarily a vocabulary thing. It's not necessarily a quality thing. You can just hear it. There's like this weird. It's like if I read Dan Brown or Stephen King or James Patterson, I don't read those and feel like I'm getting Dan Brown or Stephen King or James Patterson's thoughts. You know, there's the author and then there's the thing. And a lot of these self-publishing or self-publishing adjacent books, like, you can just tell that, like, it's just
distancing between...
There's no, like, clear craft there. You know what I mean? So it's not a quality thing, because you're right, Dan Brown sucks. We have stickers that prove it.
The ultimate proof.
But there's a layer of commodity or something. I don't know what it is, but that distances the author from the book that makes that feel more... professional, I guess, or you know what, I'm having a hard time describing what I'm trying to...
What's the author, who's the author of the candy-coated bullshit?
Kathleen Suzette.
All right, do you think, given your theory, do you think that you would like her as a person?
No, because I think I got a very clear idea of who she is as a person through this book.
I agree, but I think it's not just like she's the main character, it's that I think you can get...
She's all the characters.
Yeah, you can get a lot of her personality from the way this town operates. So it's like, it's a small town in which everybody is just constantly shitting on everybody. Like the first thing that happens, we briefly referenced it in the previous episode, but this woman who has just moved back home and like worked at her parents' bakery, somebody comes in and says, can you make the... pecan pralines with no pecans? And she's like, what? That's the stupidest fucking question I've ever heard. It's like, well, I mean, they are called the pecan pralines, like, maybe just... and the way she answered her is just like, what would that even be? What would a pecan praline without pecans be? And the woman's like, just a regular praline. I don't know, I'm allergic to nuts. And she's like, no, you stupid idiot. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's the whole tone of the book.
Yeah, she's like this super privileged. She has like three master's degrees and none of them. It's just like super privileged, like overeducated idiot is what I wrote in my notes. And then that's fine if that's a character, but that's just the perspective of the entire book and the entire town. And she's not challenged on it. She's not criticized for it. She's also not accepted for it. It's just like, yeah, that's like reality clearly for the author, you know, and everyone else also exists in that sphere. She's generally well-liked.
Yeah.
It's just, and everyone in the town, it just clearly exists in this person's imagination. And it's not, there's no, I don't know.
But also probably largely playing on like media stereotypes that have come before, like prepackaged sort of like media stereotypes that come from TVs and movie and other novels potentially. Like a lot of these books, I think, thrive on, well, everyone knows this kind of character, the snotty person in town.
Yeah.
And the virtuous, like, hero. So it's always, like, there's nothing... But so that's genre in large ways, too, right? It's, like, the protagonists are... Or the characters are, like, kind of prepackaged in many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's utilizing tropes, and there's assuming tropes. And it's not the same.
No, I think you're right.
There's also nobody in the candy-coated book who I like. There's no character that's a good guy. They're all terrible to each other. And so there's, like... One of the big dramatic, like, we have to save the town things is that the town is voting whether or not to get rid of Halloween, which for one thing, you're like, what does that even mean? Yeah, exactly. What the fuck does that mean? And then they're like, they're not like, we're going to defund the towns, but no, they're like, we're going to do away with it. And then there's a big divide between like between businesses that cater to Halloween and businesses that don't. The name of your town is Pumpkin Hollow. It's 100% revolves around Halloween. This is Salem in North Carolina.
Right.
It's absolutely wild.
So, Dave, you did not take the bait on this project.
No.
Right?
I mean, I think I would have. I was curious about reading The Cozy, but I just never got to it.
Smart. Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what you think or to get your perspective on these. Because I think going to this project, my part of my mindset was, and the reason we just discussed this in the last episode, was thinking about condescension, right? Like we condescend sometimes to these genres and or like turn up our noses at them and would rather read like either serious genre work or literary work or whatever and would never deign to pick up a romance novel. And I was like, well, why is that the case, right? Maybe there's something there. And I really wanted to go into this romance novel and read it and find like, oh, you actually... I wouldn't read this, you know, regularly, but I see the value of it. And unfortunately, I just don't. Like, it just was a real bummer.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good. Because I want...
I kind of do.
I can't see that from this one.
Not for me. I can very much see why people like these kind of books. They're not the people I like. This is the book equivalent of those Netflix and Hallmark Christmas specials that are just totally lacking in substance, but they're fine. Like I read this book in an hour, and if I were someone who like wanted a quick story, it's like the same people that probably read Reader's Digest in the 1960s, you know. It's like it's not a challenging thing. It's sort of maybe it'll have an interesting end, maybe it won't. This one doesn't, but it's got the pieces in place. It's not hard to read, and if you subscribe to the worldview, if you're someone who would enjoy that sort of like suburban bickering, and there's lots, lots of people that do, 49% of the country seems to be pretty into it.
Right.
I can see this being a source of entertainment. It's not like offensively bad. It just sucks. You know.
I think that makes more sense. And I think if I had read The Cozy, I think I probably would agree with you because that seems more palatable. Like, even Diane Maud Davidson is more palatable. I understand the appeal of DMD. In a number of ways.
Yeah.
But this, Spanish Baby of Revenge, was terrible. I can't understand why anyone would want to read this. It doesn't even satisfy from a romance point.
Yeah.
So the weirdest thing about this book was that, so it is, let's see, how many pages? 216 pages or so. So like maybe 220. And it's four scenes, basically. Ooh. Like,
wow.
The first scene takes up like 60 pages. It's like, what the fuck is going on? And then it's like another scene. There's really long, drawn out scenes where the dialogue is repetitive and they say the same things over and over again. I was like, do something. Like, have something happen. even in a like just a shitty plot driven way, just like have the characters interact or do something different than just talking in a room about what's going to happen. It's like the most inert. I don't understand what the value is of why you'd be compelled to read a book that was just four scenes of characters talking to each other and never doing anything. There was one sex scene. I knew there was two.
Yeah.
One and a half.
What were they like?
I mean, super chaste. I'll read you some.
It seems like with that kind of fetish porn, basically, right? Because it's like the revenge baby fetish. It's more about the concept of a revenge baby, and that's what gets people off, rather than like actually having like a good sex scene.
It's the tension of
another good Yak Babies book right there, just Revenge Baby.
That's the whole title.
Yeah.
So the idea that the revenge baby is this like way to establish some tension so that the two lead characters, whose names are, let's see, Amelia and Antonio, I think, can have like tension. So there's like some sort of drama for their coupling or not. But even that is sort of just like, it doesn't really, it's all abstract. There's no real complications, just sort of like talking about it. Why can't I find the sex?
I think part of our mistake was that we didn't pick good books. Like
right.
Aaron got a book that somebody gave him because they thought the title was funny. And Brick, you just picked this out of the clear blue sky. And I feel like, at least like Diane Mott Davidson, like A, has a whole bunch of books, and yeah. B is well regarded, you know, like.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
So I think like, even when you're talking about like those Netflix, shitty Netflix movies, like there are ones that people like, and there are ones that people do not like, you know? So even within the genre, like there's a range.
Yeah.
I feel like, just to put a cap on it, and I feel like if I was going to read a cozy, I would want one that felt cozy, you know, where like everybody's friends in the small town and they're like nice to each other and like they have a good relationship, you know, with and like whoever's the investigator like likes the people and the people like her.
That's the formula, right?
Yeah, like you would think that's what people gravitate to cozies for, but instead like this woman is just shrill, everybody's super judgmental, and it's not comforting.
Okay, here's the sex scene.
Okay.
His mouth drove her over the edge, and she cried out as an explosion of delight unlike anything she'd ever imagined, much less known, blew away the last vestiges of any idea that she might not be a sexual being. If this was sex, she could easily become an addict. But there was no time to recover. He was straightening, lifting himself up, and in one movement, he snaked a hand behind her back and unclasped her bra, and she pushed out of it at the same time. His head came crashing down to her breasts, his lips moving from one nipple to the next, circling her sensitive flesh, and desire was rampant in her bloodstream, running like a pack of leopards through her system. She heard the opening of the condom and felt his hands move against her stomach, and something, some thought, was pushing at her brain, but she couldn't catch it. Pleasure was her all. Nothing mattered beyond the feelings he was evoking. She was a wildling, abandoned completely to this and only this.
Wow.
And so on.
Yeah, that is grade A shit.
So she's a virgin, obviously. Pleasure returned. It was different and more demanding than before because he was inside her, and muscles she hadn't known she possessed were being stretched and taunted with desire, and was being stirred in her that demanded an answer. So it's like, it's pretty chaste as far as like sex scenes go. It's so boring. I was just like, I couldn't get over how boring the whole thing was, and how even the drama of will she have the baby, or there was never a question of not having the baby, of course. Abortion was never on the table. But will she marry him and let him raise the baby, or will she not do that? And what does that mean? Was sort of explored ad infinitum. And it never felt like it mattered, because the characters didn't matter. There was nothing. It's a hard time seeing what you would get out of this if you wanted to read romance. So I guess Nico's point is well taken, like maybe a better romance novel to deliver more. But this is a very popular brand of it. This is like the McDonald's of romance novels. So in some ways, this is like a representation of what the mainstream looks like. I found it really, really off-putting. So what's the compulsion? I get it from the cozy point of view. I think that makes more sense. I can't get this one.
I'm guessing with the revenge baby stuff, it's literally like that's your fetish. So that's you don't have a choice. Like that's where you have to go.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, there's a lot of them in that sort of same genre.
Or you're like super oppressed, man. My grandmother would have been all about revenge baby books.
Let's see, here's some other titles. Pregnant by the commanding Greek, so a Cinderella to secure his heir, claimed for the sheik's shock son. So
just like hyper repression.
Yeah, and the whole thing's repressed. Like even when it's released in the sex scenes, whatever, it's still repressed. It's still like, yeah,
right.
He's still like, I don't know, it's all...
Because it's flirting with the idea of it, yeah, more than the actual thing that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and that whole sex scene was like, oh my God, I'm having sex. Like, this is so bad, but it feels good, you know, basically. That's it.
Right, right.
But just the idea of doing
that stupid Fifty Shades book you read, where it wasn't even about the sex, it was about the contract for the sex.
Yeah, exactly. It felt a lot like that. But I have to say, even Fifty Shades had more plot than this did. Like, at least there was more than four scenes of Fifty Shades of Grey. This only had four scenes.
Yeah.
So how do you write a book that way? So it does feel competent in the sense that, like, the paragraphs and sentences work together. There's like sort of movement between dialogue. It's not like it did feel like someone who didn't know how to write was writing this, but it did feel like, what's the point of writing this then if you want to have those four scenes? If it was edited properly, this would be like six pages long. So yeah, so I guess our experiment rather did not go very well. So we need to try harder potentially to get into these genres. But I don't know where to go.
I think Nico's right. If we were to do it again, we would find one that is like well regarded.
But I think if we did that, we would be flirting with the like crossover version, right? Like finding the romance novel that is like has literary credit.
Well, not necessarily, because you can, you know, there's always, you know, there's all those, like we were talking about in the last one, there's all those books from the mid 2000s that were sort of like literary takes on genre. But like, I don't know, I don't think it's too hard to find the top 10 names in romance or whatever and just use that as your pool. And then
yeah, maybe the trick is getting away from the factories like Harlequin and then Patterson's and mm-hmm. so forth, like finding people who are writing their own books,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
and are still doing it quickly in like mass market yeah. way, but not in this like labeled way. All the Harlequin books are gonna be the same, they're all gonna be terrible, like no mm-hmm. way.
Yeah, I think so I'd be willing to do a little research, because there's probably good books in there, you know. I mean, I, you know, we haven't, we're mostly talking about cozies and romance, but I feel the same way right. about fantasy. I like fantasy movies and games and comics, and like it interests me, and just every time I try a book right. I'm just like, nope, you know. So I'm sure there's the right formula for me somewhere, and it's probably different than for you and whatever else. And I think part of the appeal of genre is people just find their thing and they just stick to it, you know. There's the people that just want like one exact kind of horror book or whatever, and they'll just read those over and over. They have their own sections right. in the bookstore. They don't go anywhere else, you know?
Well, listeners, tell us your experiences with these cozies and romance novels and your genre explorations, and tell us on Twitter at YakBabies, or email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com and give us your thoughts there. Or review us on whatever format you found this podcast. If there's a review option, give us 5 stars and say that we are very good boys. Also, patreon.com/yakbabies to get access to our bonus podcast for $1 a month. You can get access to that. There's tons of episodes there, and they're really good, especially lately. We've been on a streak of hot, fun action on the Patreon, and you should check it out. The Monster Draft came out recently is well worth your $1, so check that out. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners, and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.